CosmicRadio.tv.
This podcast would be nothing without our patrons, so special thanks goes out to them. Want to join their ranks and support independent content? Head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. Welcome to the fine edition of my so-called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Vegas. Joining me today, video game composer, Mike Kelly!
Hey, guys.
How's it going, sir?
Thanks, Roberto.
Oh, dude, thank you.
Going really good.
Thank you for being on. It's funny, because I always think back of like how a guest comes up in my sphere in terms of like, oh, yeah, I should have them on, or, oh, they're really cool. And I think it was either South by Southwest Gaming 2015 or 2016. This is how far back we are. I'm trying to think of like what day it was and almost looking at the date when the game came out to kind of figure out the comparison notes. And, you know, I've never been able to pronounce her name. Is it Isbeard?
Isbreed, I think, but I believe the name is actually Welsh, so I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing
it
correctly.
Because I always think of like yeast. Myself. Like there was an old TurboGrafx 16. I don't know if TurboGrafx 16 was like yeast. They since ported to PC and it's like an JRPG type thing, and it starts with a Y and has like some weird characters, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I was at the booth, and you know, they showed all the upcoming games and stuff kind of coming out, and one of them, the guy at the booth was saying like, oh, and this is a cyberpunk bartender game. I'm like, well, I like Cyberpunk. That sounds cool. It's like at the name of it. It's you know, this VA11 Hall A, and it's like, what's that mean? You know, Valhalla. I was like, oh, that sounds cool. And I go ahead, pre-order the game, download the demo. I guess at that point is a prologue. And what came at me the minute I booted up the game, and the song title is, I guess, Metropolis is the name of it on the prologue soundtrack. But I was greeted by this, like, Ghost in the Shell sounding Blade Runner, like, the most cyberpunk thing I could hear. And I was like, oh, I'm going to like this game a lot. Not even, you know, not even knowing about the dogs or the bartending or anything like that. No, I had no idea what it was I was getting myself into. But just that, like, opening track of, like, you know, just dripping with cyberpunk. I was like, oh, this is going to be a good game.
Thank you.
Well, because it was such a funny thing, and then like I'm greeted with a whole bunch of other music and the idea of sort of making this jukebox and kind of customizing myself. And the minute I finish the demo, I go, oh wait, that's right, it came with the prologue soundtrack. Cool, dumped it to iTunes, followed you on Twitter, you know, tweeted accordingly, and here we are. It's interesting just thinking about that whole thing. And I guess before we kind of start going in depth into Valhalla and the creation of stuff, I do have to ask, and I always ask any composer, what got you into composing music and even playing it? Because that's always a fun journey for any guy of like how, you know, a lot of people that listen to the show tend to listen to composers and seeing them as they've made it, they've done the good thing, and they've gotten this far, and they want to be you, or at least find out how the hell you became you, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start back from the beginning a little bit. I may go off the rails here and there, but I'll try and come
please,
back.
Please, if this podcast had rails, it wouldn't necessarily be a straight line. It wouldn't be like the Shinkansen in Tokyo to like, you know, Osaka or something. It wouldn't be the bullet train. It'd be more of like a weird roller coaster that loops around, meanders, probably does a few loop-de-loops in some area, and then eventually gets somewhere.
Yeah. So I guess as far as music goes and everything, you know, I've always been a huge fan of, you know, number one, video games, anime, and music, you know, especially music from anime and video games, right? you know, when I was a teenager, I had this acoustic guitar and electric guitar, and I used to, you know, read tablature, play metal songs. You know, I used to go back and play like Metallica, Slayer, Pantera, stuff like that. That was really the extent of it for a very long time. I had never taken any kind of formal lessons or anything. Years and years ago, I was living in this apartment complex. I want to say this is around 2008. And there was a producer who lived upstairs above me. and he would produce for local artists. You know, he would do R&B, rap beats, you know, things like that. A really cool guy. And we talked a little bit, and I asked him about his music, you know, because I could hear it, you know, from upstairs, you know, at night, which is fine because it was really good music. And he was like, yeah, man, I'll, you know, show you what I do and everything. So he took me up to his apartment and kind of showed me a setup. You know, he showed me he had, you know, electric piano, a keyboard, and a computer and some speakers, and that was really it. And at the time, that blew my mind, because when I thought about music production and music creation, you know, I always thought that you had to have, you know, this whole studio.
Yeah, it's like the soundproof, you know, just, room and all these kind of things. Yeah. No, it's funny, because when I kind of even sort of, as not even a hobby, but more interest, like, you know, back in the early days, like my first introduction to sort of digital music and how you composed it was things like the, like trackers, or, you know, a maybe not so legal copy of FL Studio, because a lot of people had a not so legal copy of FL Studio and stuff like that.
Right.
But yeah, it's amazing. Like, when you look at it and when you see, like, oh, really? That's all it takes, is just a microphone and a computer and a couple speakers, and you can compose what I'm hearing. How do you do that?
Yeah. And, yeah, that was really it. So the guy showed me a little bit around, and I saw the program he was using. I believe it was Reason 3 at the time. So immediately I was hooked. I was like, wow, this is really cool. Let me try something with it. So I would, you know, play around with different tools, things like that. Nothing serious. Really, all you need to get started, a decent, you know, PC, Mac, whatever you prefer, and then what we call a digital audio workstation. And this is basically a workstation where you record audio, you can record virtual instruments, and basically where you create your song.
Yeah, some of them, like he's mentioned, was Reason. I think another popular one these days is Ableton as well.
Just like Fruity Loops.
Right. There's a ton of them, is basically what I'm trying to say. Like, I don't want to, like, give the impression, like, because, like, the hard part has always been, like, well, those software cost, like, X amount of hundreds of dollars. I can't afford that. It's like, no, there are other cheaper and other intro level ones that, you know,
definitely
don't have as much, you know, mixing power as that. Because, I mean, because even like one of the ones I always remembered, I guess, is it Reason that's the Propeller Heads one? The one that has, like, all, like, the weird synths where you're plugging shit in, like, in the virtual cable ones?
Okay.
I was forgetting which one it is.
That was my first one, actually. Yeah.
Oh, God. I've always heard mixed things on Reason when it comes to, like, just having to wire stuff like patch cables and crap like that.
It's cool. I keep things simple. I don't go, like, I'm not a huge hardware guy. Like, I'm not a huge hardware nerd when it comes to the music side of things and everything. I prefer just kind of getting in, getting my hands dirty, and just writing music, right? You know, I do some of that stuff, but I don't like to spend too much time just plugging cables in here and there.
No. This is more me saying, like, to everybody else, because everyone always, whenever it comes to music composition, especially digital music composition, everyone thinks it needs to be this overly complex thing, and
it doesn't,
and it does not at all. And that's sort of the important thing. I always like to stress, even as a guy that's sort of seen friends do this in various things, from nerdcore to hip hop to, you know, video game composition, that it doesn't really. Hell, you can make a music on a damn Game Boy if you really wanted to. And there's a whole genre based on music making on a Game Boy, you know. And it doesn't take a whole lot of power to do this, because that's kind of the beauty of where we're at now in tech. Go on. You were saying something?
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, and I'm just kind of bouncing off your point there, piggybacking off of it. I think a lot of people, when they first look at a digital audio workstation, you know, especially one like Reason, it's a little intimidating. You know, looking at all the different synthesizers.
What was your take then when you first saw, like, when you're at, in, you know, 2008, like let's jump back to 2008, Mike, you know, you know, apartment below a guy producing some awesome beats above or below. And you go and you see this, you see Reason. You see Reason. God, that sounds a lot more prestigious than it truly is. Like, you see Reason. It's like, no, it's just, you see a goddamn piece of software. Not saying Reason's bad or good. It sounds better than it should. But you see this, like, does your mind explode when you see all, like, the buttons and knobs? Like, how did you get beyond the idea of just saying, okay, this is way more than it, you know, I'm ready for, a kind of thing?
So here's what I did. The guy, you know, when he was showing me all this, I was like, can you just give me a quick rundown, show me how you, you know, make a simple beat? And it's really simple. He didn't, you know, go into all the extra things or whatever. He just created an instrument. He showed me how to create an instrument, how to record a song, and how to export it, basically, right? So I started practicing around. I, at this point, I wasn't really serious in the composition. I was just kind of something I would do for fun. But for a long time, what I would do is I would just play around in Reason. I would you know, create fun little loops. And then as far as the knobs and everything go, I would literally just take time and just play with every single thing I could, you know, just to see what it did, right?
Yeah.
And then after I did that for a while, then I would, you know, do some research on YouTube and whatnot as far as, you know, what does this knob do? What does this knob do? What's it good for? And just kind of work my way from there.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, especially when you just are given, and I guess that's really a good approach for anything creative, whether it be programming, writing, or otherwise, is look at the tools you're given and just play with it, you know, because you're going to make something bad. You're going to make something sound horrible, and that's fine because you're just playing with it, or you're just learning how to do something. You know, you're going to take that attack, you know, knob and put it a little too hard, put the compression a little too great. Something's going to happen. Yeah. You're like, that doesn't sound right at all. That sounds like I'm underwater. It's like, cool. Now you know what that knob does and not to go so you know, hard on that one. I guess we could kind of go a little more in your background just because it's that. What about music in general? I mean, you said your early days, you're playing a lot of tabs and sort of, you know, Metallica and stuff like that. You know, I think that's where a lot of guitar people, especially of the internet era, got into playing music because for those who have no idea what we're talking about, who's not music inclined, even I know this and I'm not the biggest music guy. Basically, when you think of guitar, everything's done in chords. You know, you have your A chord, your B chord, your C minor, anything that makes a note is usually three or two finger things, right? Am I getting it right?
Yeah.
Making sure.
Yeah.
And so typically when you're looking at music, you have sheet music and it's, you know, notes. And that requires you to actually understand music theory a little bit and what a quarter note is and a half note. And not all kids know that. So what people have done is sort of break down the here is how you put your hands in the fret. And here's where on the fret you want to be. And it's in like this weird text format that if you know how to read it, it's cool. And it's like, you know, it's like learning, like it's like how you've broken like the Rosetta Stone and you've learned how to translate music. It's like I can play, you know, Smells Like Teen Spirit on my guitar finally.
Yeah.
Hooray. Yeah. But what got you into all that? Because usually people don't make, you know, always make the jump to like, I'm gonna play guitar, you know.
Probably just Metallica, to be honest with you. Like when I was around 12 or 13 years old, I was just the biggest Metallica fanboy in the world, you know. I used to want to be James Hetfield or Kirk Hammett and everything. And I always thought having a guitar was like one of the coolest things ever. So the first guitar I got, my parents got me just a regular acoustic guitar. Started learning things on that. And you're absolutely right. Like when you go on the internet and you figure out how to read tablature, it's like this light from heaven shines down.
Yeah, it's because you get to learn all the different music stuff. Like I remember when I was learning, like I went the opposite route and learned piano when I was a kid. And it was like when I realized that you could take MIDI files and convert them to like sheet music, I was like,
yeah.
Oh crap! I can learn Chrono Trigger. I can learn all these video game stuff, and I start, you know, playing the Zelda theme and playing all like the music stuff because I'm like, I know how to read this. I'm able to translate this to something, and now I'm Nobu Uematsu. I could play this stuff, that kind of thing. But go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. That's really how the guitar thing got started. I had a buddy who lived down the road from me. Who played guitar as well, right? And we used to just, you know, hang out all the time playing guitar with each other, playing Metallica songs, stuff like that, because we swore that we were going to be the next Metallica, you know, heavy metal band.
I'm not laughing at you. I'm more laughing at just the, like, all right, we're going to do this. We're going to learn how to play these songs. And then next, it's the super, you know, it's the Astrodome. It's time to play. We're going to rock and blow their minds. What was your band name?
Yeah.
Did you have a band name?
We didn't even have a band name.
Oh, God damn it. That's the best.
So this was the predicament we were in. At the time, you know, I was living here in the deep south. Well, I lived way out in the boonies, as they call it, like way out in the woods, you know, by the lake and everything. We had a really small school, really small community. I think the graduating class, my class, was 50 people.
Wow.
50.
That's
very small.
Right? Yeah, hyper small.
Yeah, very small. And so our trouble was finding, you know, drummers or singer. The biggest thing was a singer, right? So, you know, we would ask people would try out and it just never fit. So ultimately, it's something that never really formed. I think our moment of glory is at the talent show for school.
Of course. It's always a talent show. It's always the prom. It's always some like it's at a friend's garage when they needed someone to play music and they just couldn't get the CD player working.
Yeah, so our moment of glory was at a talent show when we played one particular. We did a cover of one particular Metallica song. And can you guess which one it was?
Oh God, I'm gonna shit. What year?
I don't know if you're Metallica fans.
Oh fuck. See, the thing is, like, my brain goes to the Black Album, and I always think of Unforgiven, but I'm probably wrong.
Close.
Oh,
same
shit.
Album. It was Inner Sandman.
So, damn. So okay. Yeah. I guess that's true. Of like, I guess. Inner Sandman was the only, because for me it was always like, I always liked Unforgiven because it was that acoustic kind of sound, and then it got in this weird like one of my favorite. It's actually one of my favorite Metallica songs. It's actually one of my favorite songs just because it's such a it's such a cool composition.
Yeah, and the moment of glory came. We started playing that song because we were the last ones to perform, and people from the front row, the first few rows, like students and everything, started coming on stage and jumping in with us. Yes. Now, granted, again, this is a really old, really small school, so the auditorium stage started to buckle a little bit.
hold on, pause. Are you saying that like because you started playing like the most awesome cover of Enter Sandman, everyone's like coming to the point where your poor little school stage starts to just bow a bit, like oh damn.
Yeah, so and thankfully we're at the very end. Like, I think I had just finished the Kirk Hammett solo, you know, towards the end of the song and everything. And they had to tell us to stop, you know, and everybody they had to tell us to stop jumping, and everybody got off stage and we had to quit the song and everything. But that was a moment of glory, right?
Of course, because you know, so, everyone's on stage like, yeah, finally, this is exactly what I've been learning these tabs for. And just like you just hear the rickety, it's just like it's about to burst.
Yeah, yeah. So that was really cool. And of course, you know, we gloated about that for the rest of our high school
of
days
course.
And everything.
That is an awesome, wow. I would never have expected like that to be the way that sort of turned out. Just the idea of like, yeah, we were rocking so hard, we almost brought the stage. See, that's what you guys, you got to do that. You don't tell them that you're at a small school. You don't pitch it like, oh, it was only, you know, 30 people. You go, no, we rocked so hard, we almost broke the stage. Like, that's the story you tell everybody else, like, in high school. And it's like, oh, really? It's like, yeah, we almost destroyed that thing. And it's like, and in the real life, it's like, yeah, but 20, it could only hold about, you know, about 15 people at tops. Yeah. And that's.
Well, just like any legend, I guess you have to have a little bit of,
you have to,
you know, flair
you,
to
you
it.
Have to, you know, make it more grandiose than it truly is.
Sure.
Well, so let's kind of skip ahead further, because, again, when we talked about, you know, you got into tabbing, you got into sort of, you know, Reason and sort of composition. How did that jump then to start making, you know, game composition or more composition as a more professional type thing?
So I around the point where I actually started to focus on compositions, like creating full songs for video games and actually improving, you know, like when I actually put my mind set to like, hey, I actually want to do this, I want to write good music and I want to make something of it, was probably a couple years later, around 2010. And you know, at the time, I started getting into the Shin Megami Tensei series. I played Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne, quite a few years ago before then, and then Digital Devil Saga, and I picked them back up, and I loved the music to those. And Final Fantasy 13 was coming out around that time as well, and I remember being really inspired by the music that was written for that. Even though it wasn't Uematsu, I think Hamazu did a fantastic job.
No, what's funny is you bring up 13, and 13 might be one of my favorite compositions in the entire game series. Like, I mean, I love 6 a game, 13, you know, you can take it or love it, but the composition, like that soundtrack, like I love, like certain things I liked about that game, just to sort of, you know, bounce off you, was like that Lightning's theme would slowly become the Retronado and become like the overarching musical theme that would come in at times that would represent less the, you know, it would be her theme. It would be the fighting music. It would be all this sort of thing. And then as the other versions came out, like Blinded by Light became part of just various points of the story as like, this is the overarching thing. So yeah, I can see where that sort of inspires you.
Yeah. And, yeah, I agree with you on that. Sometimes I wonder, like Final Fantasy X, the soundtrack to that is definitely in my top 5 soundtracks of all time, like game soundtracks. Sometimes I wonder if 13 doesn't overthrow that. But also around that time, I was on YouTube and I was just looking up Final Fantasy 13 music, you know, and I came across a guy who did a fan-made song for Final Fantasy 13. Right. And you'll see that a lot, like a lot of amateur composers. And I think that's actually kind of a good way to start, is by doing kind of fan made music of stuff that interests you or stuff that inspires you. And when I saw that, I was like, wow, he did this. This is amazing. And then I thought to myself, I was like, I want to try and do that. So around that time is when I really started to dive into, you know, practicing piano, practicing composition techniques, understanding the components and elements of a digital audio workstation a little bit more. And ever since then, it's just been a nonstop grind, I would say.
Yeah, just got to bounce off your point. If you need more examples of like people making sort of covers, if you will, of other video game stuff, a lot of the current darlings in the indie game composing scene all came out of OC Remix, like Danny B, yeah. Jake Kaufman. Yeah. You know, it's like so many of those guys were part of that like scene of like making, you know, covers, if you will, but they're more reinterpretations or entire things, right. Just inspired off of these video game music stuff. So yeah, like I fully agree. Like that's a good way to kind of cut your teeth on stuff like that. Okay. Yeah. Let us finally jump more ahead in time and get finally to the meat of the discussion, that being the game soundtrack that you composed for Valhalla or VA-11, Hall A, however you want to refer to the bar as. Because it's funny to think about composing music for a visual novel. And not to say that there isn't any interactive components in the game. There is, you mix drinks, you kind of make, you know, some light decisions, but there's not a whole lot of like jumping or what people would consider a quote unquote traditional game. I kind of get tired of arguing what's a game, what's not these days. But we don't really talk about, and I think this is important for this game and how you made the soundtrack, the concept of diegetic versus non-diegetic music. And for those who are not really, you know, this is typically more of a film topic, but I think it applies to here. Basically, diegetic music is music you can hear in the world. Like, think of like a movie scene where the jukebox is playing a song. That's diegetic. Non-diegetic would be things that, you know, the characters aren't unaware of. Like, think of like a composition in the background made by, you know, some type of orchestral thing. And the reason I bring it up with this game is that a lot of the music is diegetic in that, you know, it is the jukebox. You, the player, get to decide, you know, what Jill plays. There's only a few things that are not, that are like, you know, scripted moments and sort of things like that. How was that when it came to composing for this game? Because typically when you're composing a game, it's like, here's the scene, enjoy. And it's more for you, I can imagine, was make music for a futuristic bar. I mean, like, how did this all come about? Now I think about what the overarching question is.
So it wasn't anything I had to really overthink, and it wasn't really a hurdle for me, because when we got on the project and I started to work on it, my primary goal was to really just work on achieving a particular sound, and that sound was something that you would hear or that had been heavily inspired by, you know, soundtracks you might hear in 90s cyberpunk anime, you know, yeah. OVAs, things like that.
Yeah, I was definitely getting a lot of Bellowing Crisis, you know, when I first heard it. Yeah. A lot of, like we mentioned atop the show, Ghost in the Shell. Right. You know, and again, there's other cyberpunk games out there from that era, like Snatcher and stuff like that. We could go, you know, completely right. Deep dive, but...
So that was a genre, and that made a pretty big impact on me when I was younger and I first got into that. You know, it was the blend of synthetic elements with jazz elements, fusion elements, and orchestral elements that really stood out to me. Gundam Wing was a big part of that as well, you know, the music to that. So that was my main priority, is like, you know, I want to really express this sound in this genre that you don't really hear that much of. I want to kind of see if I can, you know, bring that back, or at least send a love letter to it, you know, and hopefully people will enjoy it. And from there, I kind of do what I do on any project I've worked on so far. I'll just, you know, I'll write tons and tons of music. And Valhalla actually worked better in that way with a jukebox, because it wasn't like I was confined to working on specific
That's sort of what I was getting at, because like right. it, I could imagine that being a bit freeing from a composition point of view when you're sort of making music for the player to pick, and that's not music that necessarily is going to be, I mean, there are those scripted moments in the game as mentioned, things like, you know, when friendly conversation comes up, it's ring start talking, or when you're at home you have a certain thing, and there's those moments that are, here are the songs that are going to be static for those points. But I can imagine just like when they just said, like, look, you're basically making music for the jukebox, like that becomes sort of a fun thing, because you think about a bar jukebox, even in the real world, you know, there is rock, there is rap, there's everything on there. It's just whatever you want to pick, and you just got to scroll through it. And sometimes there's the hit song of the era, that kind of thing. And sometimes the old, you know, the oldie kind of thing. And I can imagine just when it came to that, it became this like, well, what would be at a cyberpunk bar? You know, what would be in their jukebox in the year like 2052 or something?
Right. And a lot of it was just, it was a blast, you know, because the guys, Christopher and Fernando, I worked with, they pretty much gave me complete freedom over writing the soundtrack too. You know, I think we had a very, I think our tastes and our vision, you know, all kind of gels together very well. So they trusted me to do what I was going to do. Everybody trusted, you know, we trusted Chris with the art, we trusted Fernando with the writing and everything. And I just went to town, man, because like I saw this as, it was kind of a perfect storm of influences and inspiration, because number one, here's a chance for me to work on a project where I can write, you know, old school 90s anime, 80s, you know, OVA music to my heart's content, right? Number two, it was my first, I guess, official project, you would say, you know, so I really wanted to come out, you know, with my, you know, guns blazing.
Yeah, because it was such a, like, when it came to the prologue, and I know I said at the top of the show, but I kind of want to go more depth, was the minute I spun the game up, and it was like, and now, you know, Jill, you know, well, what do we play in the jukebox today? And it gave me this option, like, or I think in the main game, but in the prologue, like, you know, I start going through the tracks, you didn't really get to choose, and one of them was like A City That Never Sleeps, and it sounded like this super synthy noir cyberpunk type thing, and yeah. I'm like, oh, this is gonna be my jam. Like, I immediately hit like the I learned that there was a bug in the prologue that wouldn't really get the infinite loop working, because at one point it would change and go, no, don't change that, go back to the song, because I loved that. Yeah. Like, we, you know, it seemed for some reason like at times it was weird, because there'd be these moments in a bar going on and life, you know, dogs would be joking and talking, and here in the background this like super, you know, like, oh, it's mysterious, this is the world I'm in. It was just like, man, I don't know what the hell's going on, but I'm digging it. And that's sort of what it came to, like, the main game was like, I started, and I've said this on Twitter to you, and I'll say it here as well, I started going in my head of like, all right, what would Jill play on the record, on the jukebox today? Like, what would be her opening thing as she says, time to mix drinks and change lives? Like, what song would she put out of this massive collection of stuff? And then it became like, even the achievement, one of them was like, play the, you know, put like, the, you know, fill your entire playlist with like just one song. I'm like, what could Jill stand to hear for like 10 hours straight?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just like, go for it. Sorry.
No, I'm sorry. No, go ahead. Please finish.
Cause ultimately, like, that's why I think it shows that there's a little bit of freedom there, because there's a lot of varying styles in the music. Yes, they all are cyberpunk. Yes, they all have synth. But you take something like Friendly Conversation, which sounds like it's about to be some type of really, really upbeat, you know, kind of game section, or it's like someone's like, all right, folks, here's how you play the game. And it's like, do, you know, has a sort of like, you know, like there's to be charts and graphs kind of going around, like that kind of thing, versus like, you know, every night is day, and it has a sort of like a upbeat, like it's like, all right, it's time to start the party night kind of thing going on. And
yeah,
like, how did you go about figuring out, like was it just like, all right, this song I want to have this vibe, this song I want that vibe, or was there more? Because I even noticed that there's some minor overarching musical themes, like where I almost want to call it the theme. I think it's Hopes and Dreams. I think it's like the first track that opens up. You see Jill kind of looking over Glitch City. And I almost want to say like that tone seems to come up every so often in certain musical stuff. But I'm just, you know, go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's, you know, I wanted to add a little motifs, because like you were talking about in Final Fantasy 13, I always really liked the idea of a strong melody or theme, you know, popping up in different places, right? You know, not overly done, but something like that. Like, you know, there's Hopes and Dreams. The melody for that is actually in Welcome to Valhalla. The main melody in Karmatrine Dream shows up in Nighttime Maneuvers.
Yeah, that's I noticed that the minute when I put in some of the game, because, you know, I'm hearing all this music and I heard the prologue stuff. I'm like, holy crap, that came back here. And it was really, it was really cool to notice those musical moments, because, you know, we talk about video games, and we talked about this kind of in the pre-show. A lot of us grew up sort of in the idea of like video games were sort of the backgrounds to our lives to a certain degree. You know, like, there, you know, not just in like Mario and Zelda, but there'd be times when walking, you know, in town, and a video game will just pop. Video games will pop in my head just because it's so ingrained. And I always think like, man, you know, game soundtracks are important. And I always appreciate it when a composer who comes in and says, "All right, how do I make this, you know, important?" And I notice those things. I notice those like strong melodies that come up, because they show that the composer cared enough to say like, all right, well, here's sort of the overarching theme, here's, you know, whatever this is, and sort of work that into other musical compositions. you know.
Yeah, and one thing I found that works for myself as a composer is the main theme. You know, generally games have a main theme or like a title screen theme. I always find myself coming to that as one of the last tracks of something I work on, right? So generally what I do is, and this kind of ties in with the question you asked earlier about like the jukebox and everything, is whenever I get a project or something to work on, I sit down and the first thing I do is I just write, I experiment around, I write just a ton of rough drafts, just ideas, right? And then I kind of pick and choose what I like and expand upon that. And generally, like, there may be a particular melody or theme that kind of pops up every now and then, and I kind of explore that a little bit more. And if it works, I kind of just decide, you know, from a very natural place if that should be the main theme or not. For the jukebox for Valhalla, you know, again, it all kind of felt very natural because I didn't overthink anything. As far as the songs, you know, I understood that any good soundtrack needs to have a little bit of variety. It needs to maintain its core theme and feel, but still have variety in each one of the songs. Like, I don't want every song sounding the same or, you know, whatnot. So I did the best I could with that. But for the jukebox option, you know, me and Fernando and Chris were talking about it. And, you know, we were trying to decide because I ended up writing like a shit ton of music for the game. I mean, a whole lot more than what was needed. And, you know, we came up with the jukebox option that says, you know, hey, well, we got all these tracks. You know, why not let people, you know, hear what they want to hear throughout the day and everything? And I think it really turned out well. I was kind of curious to see how people would react to that rather than having, you know, particular music play at particular scenes. I'm really happy to see that people kind of understood what we were going for with that, and it felt natural to them and they enjoyed it. Every now and then, like every once in a blue moon, I'll see someone comment or say something like, you know, this music sounds way too upbeat for a bar. It should be slow jazz. I'm like, have you ever been to a bar?
That's what I was you know? Saying. That's sort of why I like the idea of it being a jukebox. That makes the most sense. Because if you've ever turned on any jukebox at any bar, it's not like magically you're going to go to some bar and it's like, oh, cool, there's this awesome song. But like right next to it's going to be Hanson or something like that. Not saying that Hanson's bad or whatever, but like you compare Metallica to Hanson, they're total, you know, total polar opposites. But they're both could be on the jukebox because at one point in time, Umbop was a thing, and somebody might want to play Umbop, and who cares? It's their quarter. They could, you know, it's their dollar, whatever. It's,
right.
Who gives a crap? But yeah, no, and that's what was so great about the game, and what I enjoyed so much about it was it became, you know, it never felt like, you know, the moments when you had this scripted songs were perfect. Like, you know, you had the, I think it's I'd have to look at the soundtrack to find out the name again. It is You've Got Me. It usually plays during any like the really emotional, especially like when you're outside of your apartment with your boss and you're just kind of going down life and your only real choice as a player is drink, open another beer, drink. Like that's your only mission. Like you're not really doing a whole lot of interaction. But it perfectly fits the moment. It perfectly fits the mood because that's where you're supposed to have that because it's non-diegetic. It's not you don't hear it. The player does or the viewer does or that the you know, that. So it becomes purposeful to do that kind of stuff. But I love the idea of just it being this jukebox, this sort of thing of like, you know, Jill starts her day. It's like, well, what are we playing today? And it's just like, boop. All right. Time, you know, let's get to work. And I love that idea because A, it gave player choice of like what to hear. But it like for me, it became this, you know, what would Jill put on? You know, what would happen? Because I would always begin every shift with commencing simulation, you know, in terms of that. And how all that sort of works out. It felt like a the kind of thing that that needed to go through there. And I definitely enjoyed that. And I think a lot of players overall did because I've heard no one say anything bad about the soundtrack. At least that's
good. I'm really happy. And of course I understand it's probably a cliche thing to say that, but I'm really overjoyed like at how well the reception has been for Valhalla because when I was first writing the soundtrack to Prologue and everything, I didn't know how it would resonate with players over here because it had a very it was highly influenced by Japanese styles and things like that.
That might be why I dug it as much as I did because like the minute it came on, I'm like, oh shit! Like that was my reaction. What you know, and not to say the game is bad or good. You know, the joke I always make is there's sometimes and if you've listened to a lot of video game music or if you know go through a lot of chiptune stuff and a lot of Nintendo music, sometimes the soundtrack's a little bit above the game's pay grade, for lack of better words. That wasn't the case for this game, but that soundtrack was like, oh. oh, I'm in for something. Like it put me immediately in that mood. Like I said before, the beginning track feels like it's out of Ghost of the Shell. And this is a love letter to the music from Ghost of the Shell, to that sort of cyberpunk era of stuff. And I can say I love the prologue music for sure. And I got that.
Thank you. Yeah. And I'm glad to hear you say that, because, you know, around the time, I think that was, you know, not long after, you know, you had your Hotline Miami and you had this, this genre of, you know, vaporwave and really aggressive synth wave, you know, synth wave that was just really in your face, which I love, you know, I love that style and stuff like that, but I didn't know how that, you know, the more softer, quieter, ambient style would resonate. And thankfully, I mean, I would have never guessed that people would have, or there would have been such a positive feedback, such a unanimous.
Well, because I think they're starting to, you kind of came in at, you know, the game came in at the right cycle of things. And I think that they're starting to become a little bit of a resurgence in cyberpunk in a good way, in that, you know, especially the indie scene. You know, we talk about like one of the things that came tie-in. In fact, before I played the main game of when it came out, I quickly finished up Read Only Memories because it was part of the marketing. It was like, and if you've played Read Only Memories, you'll see some characters come by. I'm like, I should play this other game so I can learn about the characters. And then I play that, and you hear this other cyberpunk-sounding soundtrack. I'm like, yes, this is awesome. And then you get into Valhalla. It's like, yes, this is even more awesome. And it becomes this sort of like perfect storm of like, here's a really cool approach to not only a story-driven game in terms of how you tell the story of a character and working through the ideas of not quite sure yourself or where the hell your life's going, and tied in with that a really cool, awesome cyberpunk soundtrack that both sets the mood when needs to set the mood and is like a just amazing composition.
I appreciate that, and that something I'll say too is when I started writing the soundtrack, it came from a very personal place too, as I'm sure you can kind of pick out from some of the song titles and everything. Because when I started writing the soundtrack, I was one of the things that resonated me with Valhalla was just how much of a personal and relatable story Jill's was, right?
Yeah.
You know, and around the time I first started working on the soundtrack, I was going through my own personal struggles. You know, it was one of those dark times.
And I think we all go through that. And I think that's what, you know,
of course,
why the game resonates. We've all been at that, you know, time in our life when we ask, is what we're doing what we want to do? And what does that even mean? And then even everything else happens. I'm trying not to spoil, you know, VA11 Hall A for those who haven't played it, but it tops on that. But anyways, continue, sorry.
Yeah, no, you're fine. But yeah, so, you know, a lot of the soundtrack, you know, again, kind of talking about that perfect storm of just inspiration, a lot of the soundtrack was just me kind of interjecting and putting my own feelings at the time, my own experiences into it. And one of the things, my top goal for the soundtrack was, you know, look, if I can just write music that expresses how I feel, what I've been through, and hopefully will resonate with other people, then no matter how it's, you know, received, you know, that I consider it a success.
I think like, again, for it's tricky for, I think, you know, I think it's almost easier in terms of composing. And this is not to say anything to put slight on anyone that's composed for any other games. But I think it's always tricky to compose for a visual novel type game, because a lot of times there's not a whole lot of dialogue. There's not a whole lot of people talking back to you. They're not really doing a whole, you know, you're not thinking of the game itself, you know, because typically if you think about like a platformer, you know, you're concentrating on the game and sort of like how you jump and how you interact with the world. And so the background music just becomes that background music. Whereas I think for a visual novel, you know, you're reading dialogue, you're that. So the music becomes a lot more front, and it becomes a lot more part of the game. Like, and that's it's why I asked the question of like, how did you go about doing this sort of jukebox type approach? Just because like, I can imagine like that's almost the polar opposite of what you would do in a movie. Like you wouldn't, for example, and that's the best example I can give to sort of visual novel. It is a movie in the way you do the pacing and storytelling, and that's the entire opposite. You don't say, hey, you're watching this movie, make your own soundtrack to the film. And it's like, that's not what you do. Yeah. And it's like, how do you do that? You know, and that's why I appreciate that approach so much, because it not only A, did it give me the player like kind of an idea of what music to pick, but you even got to unlock certain songs. Like when you there's at one point you talk to a pop idol, and once you talk with her a certain amount, you can then purchase her hit song. You know, and I was like, that's kind of cool that I can buy that for my jukebox at the job and sort of hear that and part of that, or even moments of like one of the moments that made me just like crack up laughing, not just visually but musically, was with Streaming Chan and just like this. Yeah. This overly, you know, we talk about at the beginning of the anime stuff, and like that's what got me. It was like this just huge anime vibe of like, you know, this like it's the theme song for like hi everybody, it's Streaming Chan, yay!
So that song was it was incredibly fun to write, because I wrote the song before there was even gameplay footage. They showed me the picture of Streaming Chan. You know, with some of the text, you know, like just kind of a idea for it or whatever, right? And they were like, you know, we want this really kind of upbeat, catchy theme for it and everything. And I was like, okay, I'll see what I can do. And I remember when I was writing that song, like it felt so cheesy and fun in a great way, like a
it
really
was,
fun
it
way.
It was so good. It was one of like there are moments in that game that made me crack up laughing in terms of the music. The friendly conversation made me crack up laughing just because I'm like, this is great. This is exactly the visual should be here. This is the music should be playing. But the Streaming Chan, like the minute she came in, like visually I was laughing, but the music, like it came to the point where I looked forward to her coming into the bar, not for any of the visuals anymore, but for just like the music. And I was just like, once I got able to buy that song for the bar, I'm like, all right, we're playing this. We're putting this in the playlist. Jill's got this stuck in her head for no pair. I don't even care if Jill doesn't like this. This is for me, damn it.
As simple as the song is, it was actually one of my favorite songs I wrote for it, because you know, I love the melody, felt really catchy, and then I loved the midsection where you had the organ come in, you had the claps.
Oh no, that's why it sounds like a goddamn theme. It sounds like the TV theme song. It's like, and coming, it's a Streaming Chan show, and it's like, it sounds so perfect. Like it has like organ play, like the live bands performing, and I loved that moment. It's just, again, it was that. It was those moments that I'm like, okay, I see this guy was given at least some, like, here's some scripting notes of things to do, because he could get shows in a good way. But I was like, man, putting that in parallel with the idea of like, well, how do I make just music for the bar? And that was like, why I was like, man, this is such a very wide gamut of a soundtrack. And even though, yes, you do want to keep it varied as gaming, you still, it still is like this. If you know, I almost think sometimes when it comes to creative work, sometimes having restrictions is good, and sometimes having a little too much freedom can make, you know, because there's nothing that says like, well, what if there was this weird jazz song in here? And I'm not saying that jazz isn't bad. Just sometimes it doesn't, you know, vibe with what's going on. But I loved those moments that were scripted. But I also love just the idea of choosing these sort of things and stuff like that. That, and if the developers are listening, I want the hat. I want the Streaming Chan hat to be sold. Like, I want that hat. Like, I've wanted that hat since the beginning of the game. I'm sorry if I say that here again. but just to kind of get a closing thought, because we're almost out of time here, almost the hour mark. What were the final, like after the project was done, after the game came out, after all that, is there anything post all that you wish you had either worked on more? Or more importantly, was there anything that you just couldn't get done due to time? They're like, man, if only I had time to have composed this song or something. And again, not because this is nothing more like as like a weird postmortem, just because I'm always curious as to, you know, when a project's done, it's just like, you know, because you're never happy. You know, that's the rule of any creative work. You're never happy. Course. At some point in time, you have to ship. You know, it's just what happens.
Right.
So I'm just curious.
Looking back on it, you know, I put just infinite hours in that soundtrack. So I wouldn't necessarily say there's anything I look back and kind of regret. I mean, I've gone back and listened to the soundtrack, and there are things now because writing the soundtrack was an incredible learning experience too. You know, I learned a lot of different techniques, a lot of things with it. I would say the biggest thing I have is, you know, I might go back to some tracks and say, oh, I could have maybe done this transition this way or added something in the background here, something minor, right? But I think in the case of music or art or anything like that, I think it's, you know, always going to happen. You know, when you finish something, put it out, there's always something, oh, I could have done this.
Well, because the thing is, like you're, you know, when you're creating it, you're so up close and personal with it that you know You know, it's not so much of like, oh, I hear, like, it's like me, I'll say, oh, I hear the strong melody here. Oh, I hear this. It's like, you'll hear like, no, I hear where that envelope is. Man, that envelope shouldn't, you know, I see it's, I hear it's 80%.
Exactly.
It should be like 85 or 90. And only you will hear that that envelope needs to be 85 or 90, whereas no one else will. And so you're, it's less about you saying, like, I could add this background thing. It's more of like, I could add this background thing. And then maybe I could have tweaked that thing. Maybe I should have mashed this a little bit. Maybe if I drop the EQ, like, you start getting back into like the music composition mode again.
Yeah. The other thing I would say is the whole Kiramiki bit. You know, I, during the time I wanted to write some tracks that had vocals with it, but thankfully, you know, that's something that's in the works and that, you know, we're getting done, you know.
That's cool. That's cool. Because again, there was like those. I almost felt like the show had vocals, but again, I understand that sometimes you can't find a singer, you can't find someone that's going to be great for this project. But, so I always ask this about any artist. I ask this about any composer, and I know you've tweeted about this in the past. What's next? What can we expect next from Michael Kelly? Because he put like a weird tweet of like, I'm working on a project. It's not like Valhalla. It's not going to be this electronica thing. And I'm like, yeah, why wouldn't it be? Because it's going to be a different game. Why would I, you know, listener, assume that all this guy does is cyberpunk stuff?
Well, it's really refreshing to hear you say that because something, you know, so Valhalla came from a very natural place, right? But at the same time, my goal as far as being a composer is I don't want to write the same album over and over again or the same soundtrack over and over again, right? I want to write different material. I want people to be able to listen to different soundtracks and say, okay, that sounds like Michael Kelly, you know, that sounds like a style, but it's a completely different experience.
Well, to kind
at the
of
same time, right?
Kind of put in perspective for people who are not soundtrack inclined, if you want to have a really cool kind of like comparison to your style and stuff like that, listen to the soundtrack for Fez and then listen to the movie soundtrack for It Follows and remember that's the exact same composer.
Great example there.
Right.
Yeah.
And you hear like the tone examples, you hear sort of things like, oh yeah, I can hear this is, you know, disaster piece, but they are total polar opposite. And that's cool because that's how it should be. You know, even if you take Mark Mothersburg, that typically would, you know, this is always a fun one to always remind people of because if you remember, it's cool. Not only did he compose, you know, a lot of the movie soundtracks for things like for Life Aquatic and a lot of that, I forget the director's name off the top of my head. I can't believe I'm blanking on him. Wes Anderson. He composed a lot of Wes Anderson stuff, but he also, you know, was part of Devo. He was also the guy that made the Rugrats theme. And so, you know, you have all those sort of parallels. It's like, that's what a composer does, is that they want to go and branch out.
Yeah. And, As far as projects, there's a couple projects I'm working on right now, like game projects that are really solid. The one that I can talk about is a horror game called Yuppie Psycho. It's by the same guys who developed Count Lucanor, which was kind of a smaller indie horror game that came out last year. That was a lot of fun. You know, I played the game and a lot of fun, a lot of great atmosphere, and it was genuinely creepy. I haven't played a genuinely creepy game that kind of got under my skin for a long time, but that one managed to. So I'm working with them on their new game. It's going to be a lot more horror oriented. The terms I've kind of used to describe it and set the tone for when I compose is that I want it to sound eccentric, I want it to sound weird, and I want it to sound dark as hell. Right.
So what I'm hearing is you're gonna look to like the Silent Hill soundtrack for inspiration. Not Silent Hill 2, Silent Hill 1. Only, and I'm gonna say that jokingly is because a lot of that soundtrack is less about. Like there is like the trip hop stuff, yes, and there is sort of that stuff, but like a lot of the real in-game soundtrack is just like these sounds of droning and sort of things like that.
Silent Hill 1 is a masterpiece. I mean, when you listen to it, I'm not saying it's pleasant to listen to by
any means. No.
But it's a masterpiece for what it did. So initially I was looking at Silent Hill 2 or Silent Hill 1 for inspiration, but I thought to myself, I was like, this has already been done too many times and there's nothing I can do to it to make it better, right? So one of the things that I'm focusing on for the soundtrack is rather than like harsh industrial noise, you may hear tidbits of industrial influence because, you know, I've always loved industrial, you know, even past Silent Hill and things like that. But to make the soundtrack memorable, I didn't want it to just be, you know, track after track.
You don't want to be like a Nine Inch Nails ripoff or anything like that, per se.
Yeah, and I don't want just drones in the background, right? Like, I don't want just plain drones in the background. Like, I really want interesting textures, and I want really unsettling and weird sounds to stick out. So a lot of my inspiration has actually come from, you know, some anime horror soundtracks, like Higurashi. You know, right. Kenji Kawai did a great job at that. But also, I've gone back a lot to classic horror soundtracks, like the original Carrie. What else? Friday the 13th, Fright Night. A lot of Suspiria is another one.
Right.
And one of the things I noticed, especially with, like, the original soundtrack to Carrie and things like that, is how you don't hear too many synthesizers. It all focuses on these just really unsettling sounds.
A lot of horror, and at least in my opinion, when it comes to the soundtrack, I think the best horror soundtracks are the more minimal ones anyways. The ones that just sort of, you know, concentrate on this sort of central concept of what you want to inspire. Because you can't recreate the Halloween, like the Halloween soundtrack. You can't recreate certain things. But even then, like, if you think about how they did it back then, they didn't have a whole lot to work with because for budgetary concerns. It's not like they didn't have an orchestra because they didn't want one. They had synths because it was cheaper, and it's just worked out to make this like really droney thing. It's like, well, how do we just do less with less?
I think a fantastic example of that was in the Halloween score for the original Halloween. One of the most threatening songs I've ever heard in any kind of horror movie was, I believe it's called The Shape Stalks, and it's just a simple piano note. And then you have a little symbol that goes ding 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 ding, and that alone creates so much tension.
Well, that's the thing, guys. That's the idea. That's kind of the thing that a lot of people don't, you know, because everyone thinks of that these scores have to be this grandiose thing when it doesn't.
Right.
It has to fit the mood you're trying to appeal, and that's, you know, whether it be a cyberpunk bar or a horror kind of thing. It has to, you know, you have to go and approach the project and say like, well, what does this project need? What is going to bring out this emotion, you know, because the game will do its thing. The writers will do their thing, hopefully. And you as the composer is like, well, how do I add to that picture? How do I bring the player to have that sense of dread and fear musically? And that's sort of why I'm like, I'm excited to hear it just because of how well you did, you know, the cyberpunk feel. I'm like, I'm curious, how do you approach that? And hearing you talk about, you know, Carrie and all these stuff, like, okay, he's on the right track for how to get the inspiration for it.
It's taken a lot of experimentation because I've never written a full-on horror soundtrack, but I've definitely started to find my groove, and, you know, I'm really excited of what's come to fruition, right? And I think something you said was really fantastic, and you said it's not about being grand, you know, super grand or anything. It's like, how does it make me feel? And one thing that always stuck with me was Akira Yamaoka in an interview he did on the Silent Hill 2 DVD. He said that he didn't feel that the melody was the most important part of a song. You know, and I actually really agree with that. You know, of course you have to, you know, at times you need to have a really catchy melody and it's incredibly important. But what's always stuck out to me whenever I write any kind of song has always been, what does this chord progression make me feel? You know, what does this synth make me feel, right? What kind of tone does this set? And I build from there.
Well, because Silent Hill 2, like thinking of like some of my my favorite songs in that entire soundtrack aren't melodic. It's like, you know, it's white noise. It's like weird sort of, you know, sample utilized. Or even in, I forget, Lone Survivor is the game, is an indie game sort of like inspired from Silent Hill 2. Right. Even that has like very minimal stuff in its soundtrack. And that's cool because that's what works. Like I think when it comes to horror, it's not, you know, because if you have too much going on, the player is a little too distracted and can go like, oh, well, the music's soothing. The music's calming me down. Surely nothing bad will happen. But if the less you hear, just like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
I don't hear anything.
Great you say that, because I'm not going to spoil anything, but there's a particular section where that ideology comes into play. And all I'll say is that sometimes no music, like,
oh god, no, that's the worst. That's when you know shit's gonna go down, when the music stopped, when there's nothing silent, like that's when it's like, fuck, something's happening, something's
even
there.
Not even as a build-up or anything, right? Like, I'm talking, I talked with a developer about this particular scene And he liked one rough draft I did. He wanted to include it, but his original idea was to keep it quiet. And then after I played through the scene or saw it a couple of times, I was like, no, let's keep this dead quiet. Yeah, I only want to hear the sound effects.
You that's know? The point. So, that's why. Really like you know, and if you think of your favorite horror scenes, and the only reason I bring it up is just because like this is what makes me excited that you're kind of even that kind of composer. It's awesome. Because you think of your favorite horror scenes, it's the breathing. It's not anything important. You hear just the footsteps or whatever because they're hiding in the you know in the closet hoping not to be found by the killer, because if they do that's you're screwed. And I love that you're even playing the games like, nah, I know you want my song, but no, this does not belong here, keep that off. Right. And that makes it. What's the game name? What if you can say it already?
Yuppie Psycho.
Okay. I would make sure I keep that in my head because I want to definitely check it out. Mike, thank you so much for being on. Let's say people have enjoyed this conversation and actually want to check out more of your music, you know, not just simply from that or keep track of you and stuff like that. How can people follow you and find all the stuff of yours, sir?
Of course, there's you know, my Bandcamp where I keep the albums I've released at. I believe it's garode.bandcamp.com or bandcamp.garode. I always get the two mixed up.
I think it should be some. It should usually the nomenclature is name.bandcamp.com.
Yeah. So sort of garode garoad.bandcamp.com, SoundCloud at Garode Music, Twitter at Garode Music, and of course I have a Facebook page at Garode Music too, and then a YouTube, just Michael Kelly, if you'd like to follow me.
There you go. Of course, you can find me. I'm at Vincent404 there on the Twitters. If you want to catch previous episodes of this podcast, you can go to our website, cosmicradio.tv/8bitlife. There you find links to the show notes, the tour account for the show, which is at 8bitlife podcast, and of course, after you bought all of Mike Kelly's music that's out there and coming out there, and you look in your pockets and you see that you have like $1.50 left over, head over to patreon.com/8bitlife there and help the show become bigger, better, and more awesomer. So that is it for the day. So tune in next time we talk to another person completely and utterly random. Bye, people. This has been a CosmicRadio.tv audio production. For more awesome shows, head on over to our website, CosmicRadio.tv.